Hello and welcome, everyone. This is a very special, absolutely brand new podcast called MTG Potpourri. You may recognize my voice if you're a really old listener of podcasts. My name is Tom, and joining me to bring you this new podcast, we have two very esteemed guests, and both of them have very, very sexy headshots on my Uber conference page. So to my left, I have Adam Staborski. Adam, do you maybe want to just introduce yourself and say why you have such a fancy picture on your Uber conference picture?
Well, I have a fancy picture because I have lovely friends. I'm the content manager for Gathering Magic. I'm a writer on dailymtg.com, a coverage reporter at Grand Prix, and did a Pro Tour as well last year. So that's where the photo is from, Pro Tour Dragon's Maze. And the wonderful Pro Tour photographer, Craig Gibson, gave me a great headshot, so I look great everywhere.
Yeah, it looks like you just looks like you're, it looks like you want to get into my pants. It's kind of what I'm getting from this picture.
The odds are fair that I do. Yeah.
Sideways, you got the one eyebrow up saying, you know you want it.
No, Tom.
so we'll go into some more details for the backgrounds of the guys here that are actually good at playing Magic. But next to him, with a just a phenomenally looking good forehead, we have Conley Woods.
Hello, everybody. Tom likes to bring me into random podcasts at random times, so I'm here doing it.
Yeah, so we'll go through. Well, I want you, because I thought we had fun when, if anybody's from way, way back, Conley did join on
Monday Night. It's not that way back. It's like 2 years ago.
For me, that's before kids. That is like age of my life.
We were on Monday Night Magic, which I believe still exists today in some form, right?
Yeah, I believe
Chewy runs it or something.
Chewy runs it, and there's a, I know, I think it's Aaron Lecluzzi. I don't know how to pronounce the last name, but
that's not a real person.
That's not a real name.
Aaron's going to write me after the show.
Yeah. Do you know Aaron? I wasn't familiar with. Okay.
I do not know Aaron. But for purposes of sounding awesome, I'm going to say I do know him, and he's a great guy, and that podcast is the best.
It is the best Magic podcast ever, besides this one, because, I mean, really, if you can't master it after one episode, you know, why ever record another one?
Well, I mean, we kind of set the bar like really, really high. So,
yes, because of course the bar got set pretty high when, I don't know, Adam, I'm not sure if you listened at all to Monday Night Magic when Conley and I were on, where quickly the show would devolve into completely non-magic related things like revenge crabs and eating poo buckets for $20 and I can't, bearskin rugs. I just remember bearskin rugs.
Yes.
Well, two things. One, I was with you on episodes. In fact, I've casted with both of you on episodes of Monday Night Magic. There's a good, like, 6 or 8 month streak where I was with you guys. So I distinctly recall that. And I distinctly recall before we fired this cast up that we said we would avoid that and keep it quick and simple. So why don't we move on?
Quick and simple, but you have to have flavor. And what has more flavor than, you know, a bucket of poo for $20.
I still get occasional emails regarding that.
Sweet. How about boner jams? Is boner jams still around?
Some people say boner jams. A lot of people, I went on the A-team multiple times, and I had to tell them the story about how I got my nickname Boats back in high school. So a lot of them call me Agent Boats. So that one stuck. There's a lot of nicknames out there. Confather is probably the most common in terms of the pro community. That's what most people call me.
Okay, that one seems a little weird to me, but
the Confather? It's like the Godfather, but using my name. Get it?
But it's, to me, you sound like you're a shyster, like you're conning people, like you're the father of cons.
Maybe I am. Maybe this whole thing's been a long con, Tom. Maybe I'm in your basement stealing all your gold.
You could be the worst cheater on the Pro Tour for all I know. I've never seen you play. You could just have a coat filled with Chinese proxies in there that you're whipping out deck.
You don't need to bring fake cards to the Pro Tour to cheat. I think you could use real cards to cheat. You don't have to also.
But you're the con father. You're going to be bringing that's
right in your news segment, right? You transitioned for yourself. I'll let you take it away right now.
We're talking like Thomas Chinese Crown Affair level of Pro Tour cheating. I mean, you got like 18 guys dressed like you, you know, with briefcases of fake cards moving in and out.
It used to be back in the day, that used to be a thing on the Pro Tour. They would scout. They would like literally stand on top of chairs to watch matches so they could write down what every single person in the tournament was playing like during round one. And that way their entire team would know every single matchup before it happened. Like this used to happen all the time.
When did they crack down on that sort of thing?
They didn't ever really crack down on it. It just kind of came a norm not to be like that. Like some, like we still run around and write down matches, but we usually do it with like three rounds left in the tournament, so we know who, what people will be playing against in the top eight, because that's really important. But yeah, it used to be like at the beginning of a tournament or pro tour or whatever, you'd have your entire team scout out what everybody was playing. There was like some instances where the first time they put deck lists up online, like anyone who had the internet had like a severe advantage, so they ended up taking down offline, and then they put like paper versions of the deck list around the entire room, so that way it was equal for everybody, because they're like, oh, this is actually unfair because some people have the deck list and some don't. So they just printed out physical versions of every single person's deck list and posted them around the room.
I think I'm trying to remember. I'm pretty sure the story of that was it was Pro Tour Charleston.
Sure,
Charleston or right. New Orleans, but the like a whole bunch of guys from I think Star City went down and they helped out, and they basically got all of the deck lists typed up on day one, and so that's what created like this massive wall of deck lists, is because once they were already up, exactly like you said, it was, you know, an advantage that some players had and some players didn't, so they ended up. The solution was to just print all the deck lists up. So the pairings would go up. People see their pairings and then would run over to see what their opponent was playing.
It's kind of weird from your side, kind of like that sort of the pro community sort of decided it's on its own to do this, whereas they're sort of self-policing.
It's mostly the pro community's just kind of become a lot more casual with each other. Like a lot more people are friends. There's not as much bitter rivalries like there used to be, cutthroat rivalries. Most people who are on teams are friends with other people on other teams. And it's just a lot more. I don't know. We're just kind of like a giant, weird, like fraternity sort of type thing. Like it's, you know, we want to win against each other, but we're also happy when the other person does well versus like, you know, like you, random pro that you barely know, you still cheer for more than like a random guy you don't know. So it's kind of, I don't know. You just have this little bit of attachment, to everybody. Cause you know, the kinds of things they have to do, the hours they go through, the types of lives they have to live to do what they're doing. And you kind of have just like a little bit of innate respect for them. So everybody's just a little more upfront and casual about things. Cheating's gone down, I would say, significantly. The amount you watch for cheating has also gone down. And yeah, people are just a lot more friendly, I would say, in general.
Huh. See, I almost, in my mind, I would have thought the opposite. I almost felt that there would almost be more like tribalism now that we have a few major, like basically comic web stores, or not comic but magic web stores, where they have their own teams and, you know, potentially premium subscriptions, all this other stuff. I thought it'd even be worse, where it's like I'm not talking to the Star City guys because I'm a Channel Fireball guy and stabbing them in the bathroom.
That doesn't really happen anymore.
Okay, it's just things I just don't know. Where if you're a really casual person, you just, you know, catch coverage once in a while, you wouldn't be like,
obviously there's individual rivalries amongst certain people, but that has nothing to do with any type of like innate, you know, team structure or anything like that. That's just somebody doesn't like somebody, but that exists in every facet of everything in the world. So yeah, there's not really any, like, you know, bitter team rivalries.
So what you're saying is once you ascend to that level of wizardry, the petty concerns are beneath you at that point.
Yeah, I would say that, like, you know, when people think that pros are people that are really nitpicky and stuff like that, there are definitely some that are that way. But even like that attitude generally fades away once you get past the PTQ level, because you're no longer trying to, like, you understand what's important and you're no longer trying to prove yourself through words or demonstration. You're trying to prove yourself through results, basically. So it changes from a game of you know, let me show you how awesome I am at this game by showing you this cool trick I know in combat. It's like, yeah, we all know that combat trick, like that's something you need to know. So it stops being about that and like, let me show off and let me demonstrate that I'm bigger and more powerful than you. And it's more about, let me win, let me play my best, and, you know, if I'm doing well, you're going to respect me for that. So it kind of just, the whole mentality sort of shifts. It's just, it's more of a, like when you play high level Magic, you're basically competing against yourself every single week. You have to play against a variety of opponents, but in reality, you're basically trying to build the best deck you can and play the best you can, because you're never going to play perfect and you're never going to build the perfect deck. So you have always something to improve on week after week.
And no, we can improve on, guys, every week is going over the Magic news. So I mentioned a little bit before, but it seems like the big hot story of this week was sort of a combination of the supposedly this big discovery of these high quality, I'm doing big air quotes, high quality Chinese fake Magic cards that just happened to coincide with when we learned about the new M15 card frame. Do any of you guys you know, do you buy the conspiracy theory that Wizards knew about this before? And that was,
I don't think so. There's been counterfeit cards before. And the other thing is like, these cards, the majority of them would be older cards anyway. Like you would want to counterfeit older cards that are worth more money, not the newer cards that are, you know, everybody can acquire. So this wouldn't even stop. This wouldn't even prevent counterfeiting from occurring. It prevents counterfeiting from occurring from new cards, but there's 20 years worth of cards out there to counterfeit. So like it wouldn't even stop that. And on top of that, like there's no way in order for them to get all these cards out, like they started printing these, what, a year ago or whatever. Like there's no way they knew about this for a year and kept, and the entire world was hush hush about fake Magic cards for a year. Like that's just not a thing.
And as actually Adam was on Gathering Magic that I read about this, did you want to just kind of briefly describe what is changing with the new card frame at M15 and is making my cards into Pokemon cards?
I mean, I wouldn't say that, but I mean, basically the three major changes is they thinned the color border, basically giving a little bit more room for the text box, the art box, which is great for anybody that's ever seen cards in German because they could use it. And at the bottom, kind of as a compromise to, you know, to create some efficiency and make a consistent, I guess, you know, they said it's for consistency across all of their different, printings, but they have basically a thicker black, bottom now. They just expanded the border and in there, it has stuff like, the collector number, the art, the artists, the language, things like that. And it's apparently going to be machine readable, which Aaron basically said will solve the issue of where cards that aren't supposed to be in booster packs end up in them.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I didn't quite get what he was referring to, but that makes sense.
Yeah. Like when the Theros card appeared in something like Dragon's Maze or Magic 2014, something like that, just to, you know, cause they do overlapping runs, of course. You're a printer, you schedule your time efficiently. And then the last thing is for rares and mythic rares, they're going to have like a little foil, like a holographic bubble. So it kind of, I mean, nobody's seen what this looks like, but it almost reminds me of the iridescent Ultra Pro bubble. If you remember the old Ultra Pro collector card protectors, and they had the little holographic circle on like the front where you would look at
your card. It always covered up some vital part of information on the card.
Yeah,
it always covered up like a power toughness or for some other card type, something else. It was always the worst.
But didn't you worry about having some maybe high quality Chinese fake knockoff Ultra Pro deck sleeves that was helping prevent?
I was like 10 years old with a Star Wars card. I didn't think about counterfeit.
Well, and here's the thing is the thing I'm worried about with those little bubbles is if they're going to change the texture of the cards in any way or the feel of the cards or the weight of the cards, like. Now, if they like protrude from the card in any way, that might be weird when you're opening a pack. It might give away something. Like I assume they've gone through all these precautions because like why wouldn't they? But at the same time, it's a little weird. Like I have to kind of get a feel for these in person before I really can weigh in one way or the other.
I guess I would be toward, when I first saw this, I you know collected baseball cards for a short period of time, kind of in the late 80s, early 90s, and like Upper Deck was sort of the first premium baseball card. They had a foil stamp like this, and it was not at all raised or, I would say, seemed to affect the weight of the cards at all, especially for how small it is as far as you can see on the pictures of this.
Sure.
And are you guys, this might be more for kind of the flavor players, but are you excited to know who designed given cards? Like, is that something you care about?
Here's the thing about that. Last did a podcast, Tom. I am now also have a full-time job, a day job, where I am a game designer for a company called Direwolf Digital in Denver. I've been working there for almost 2 years.
So you gave up the phone sex gig?
Yes, I did. Well, okay. I mean, I still do that secretly, but my boss doesn't know about it.
Okay.
But he's called in a few times.
So it was called Direwolf Digital Games?
Direwolf Digital, yeah. Luis Scott Vargas also works there. They pulled me, Luis Scott Vargas, and Patrick Chapin in about 2 years ago. We have some projects we're working on that should be out eventually. Once we can talk about those, obviously I will. But yeah, so I do game design. And the thing about it is when you design a card or a game model or an idea or an item for Diablo or whatever you're designing, you almost never is that I should just say basically never. Is that idea solely yours? First of all, like Magic cards, I know for a fact, go through a ton of iteration. You know, somebody presents an idea, a whole bunch of different designers throw in their ideas on them. They play test the card, etc. Even if a card, like right now on my screen, for some reason, I'm staring at Vyoshino Racketeer. Even if, let's say, Zach Hill submitted this card exactly as is, 2/1 for two colors and a red, when it enters the battlefield, discard a card, draw a card. Even if he submitted that exact text, cost, power, toughness, everything as is, he still can't really claim credit for designing the card by himself, because that card still had to go through playtesting hours that a bunch of people did for him. The card had to go through balancing sessions. It was looked over. An artist came up with things. Like, cards and objects and things are rarely just owned by one single person. It's usually a team working on things. So I think, and I think R&D from Watsi knows this. I think they're pretty cognizant of being, you know, unified and not separating people, because it gets really, like, if they're giving credit to designers, specific designers on cards, things can get kind of competitive and there's wrong incentives there, I think. So I think they're basically going to reserve the flavor text doing that when it's things like the community created cards or the players championship created cards, things like that. When it's like a special occasion, I don't think it's going to be like Mark Rosewater designed this common. Like, I don't think it's going to do that too often. I think that would defeat the purpose, and I think it would cause a lot of tension in R&D.
Yeah, well, it does say in the description that not every card will feature this. So I'm curious how they're going to decide.
I think it's going to be a significant, like very few cards will have this, like maybe a couple per set. I mean, like I said, I just don't expect them to kind of cause that type of inner turmoil amongst the company. Like, it would just get super competitive. It would promote the wrong things. People would be encouraged to like hoard their designs for a long time. That way they got it perfect on their own, so that before they submitted it, so that way, you know, it was able to get all the way through design and stuff. There's just way too many negative things that can go wrong. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're smart enough people to avoid that. So I think it's going to be reserved for really special occasions.
So how long do you think until you get a design by Felicia Day on one of these cards?
Probably in the first set, I would guess. Probably.
I just got to worry. It would be sort of, you know, as we're trying to build, and we'll talk about, they're really Hasbro, Fox, they're expanding Magic as a brand, as a, I guess, an entity is. It'd be sort of weird when they start to try to maybe bring in celebrities or other things to try to, am I going to get a Magic card that tells me that, hey, this was designed by the awesome guys that made the Magic the Gathering movie? You'd be like, oh God, I, you know, designed by Mountain Dew, you know, Tropical Blast, Taco Bell. So you guys, so it sounds like in general, Conley, you're sort of waiting to see what this looks like.
It's called what? Baja Blast. It's called Baja Blast.
It looks gross. I'm sorry. I don't drink
it's
something.
Good.
It looks like mouthwash.
It's good. I don't know what it's like. I don't drink a lot of soda, but I actually make an exception when I occasionally go to Taco Bell to get a Baja Blast because it's so different. It's like a weird cream soda-y. I don't know.
Oh God, that sounds terrible.
Trust me, Tom.
Do you actually like cream soda? No actual person likes cream soda.
You don't
soda.
Like cream soda?
No. Adam, do you like cream
You're
soda?
Satan. You are Satan.
Yes, I like cream soda. You're an idiot, Tom.
It just seems wrong. Soda should be...
What? Cream soda is like the soda of sodas.
No, I mean, if you're going to go down that road, go with root beer. I mean, if you're going to go with kind of an odd tasting soda.
Root beer's acceptable, but it's... I don't know. Anyway, this Magic movie thing is pretty sweet.
I do have the official press release that came from Wizards
Don't
from Mark
that.
Nolan. I'm not going to read the whole
thing. It's so absurd. Yeah. They go into so much stupid detail.
There's some pretty funny quotes in there. They're hoping that these compelling characters will resonate with more than 12 million players and fans worldwide. It doesn't give us a ton of information. It just says it's officially announced its partnership with 20th Century Fox to develop Magic the Gathering is a new film franchise. So they actually mentioned it here. They use the word movies as in potentially multiple movies. They name dropped Simon Kinberg, who they said was a creative. I'm not sure what his exact role was on X-Men Days of Future Past. And he was also in a few other things that they gave us on a different email. But
they all
like
seemed
he's
like, yeah, they all seemed like off the mainstream stuff, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was really Magic related.
Like nothing like he directed Transformers, like not that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this is a genre films banner is based on. This doesn't tell us really anything. I would say
if this is successful, this is probably going to be his breakthrough thing. Like they seem like they're trying to establish some credibility with him, but it seems like while he's been in the business for a while, he really hasn't had that home run thing yet.
And I mean, for, I kind of put this out on Twitter. I was kind of wanting to get kind of you and Adam's thoughts. Is there any way this is not going to be sort of a character driven movie, say with Jace? It feels like this has to be a Planeswalker focused to make it a coherent movie.
Yeah, that was the whole shtick of changing away from like nigh omnipotent semi demigod type Planeswalkers to these very human, very mortal people that have very, you know, relatable emotions and connections. I mean, if you read some of like the backstory between like Jace and Liana, and like they talk about, you know, what else Beth's been through, and here's the whole story about Johnny and his brother and how Spark awakened and blah blah blah. You know, it's definitely going to be, you know, I would be shocked if it wasn't about the idea of a Planeswalker awakening and getting thrust into this, you know, new world, all chaotic and weird and different, and having to figure allies from enemies and how they somehow magically are the one person that like defeats Nicol Bolas somehow. You know, I just can't imagine it not being that type of, you know, welcome to magic, you wake up as a Planeswalker movie.
I could see it not being that, and instead being focused on the current Planeswalkers and trying to establish their lore, like Jace and Chandra being the, or just like any of the, you know, the main Planeswalkers being the main characters would be like totally within the realm of possibility, and I think probably something that Wizards would actively want to encourage, because you take when you're taking your brand, which is definitely these Planeswalkers, they've already kind of thrust it into our faces as gamers. They printed these certain Planeswalkers dozens of times, you know, and so we're used to them, and we're like, these are the Planeswalkers. And then when you're trying to convert that over to a global populace, you basically have to do that again. You can't just take it for granted that you've already done it for the 12 million people that play Magic. So I think they're probably just stick with like Jace, Chandra, Liliana, that type of stuff, because those are really compelling characters with really compelling backstories, and they could basically create entirely new sagas for them. They're definitely not going to be doing any of this Weatherlight stuff that people are talking about. That is nonsense. There's no way they're going to go back 20 years in Magic history and start telling old tales that nobody cares about anymore.
They're not going to remake my Arena novel. The first ever Magic book with Garth.
I mean, I know people want that kind of stuff, but that would literally, like, this movie has the potential, or the series of movies has the potential to do things bigger than I think anyone realizes. Like, you know, this podcast that we're doing, you know, some number of thousands of people probably listen to it, but it's not, we're not a mainstream thing. We're an underground society. We're an underground community, and we know how great the game is. But if this movie comes out and it's done well, it's not old D&D shitty movies, like we all know, you know what I'm talking about, Damon Wayans, et cetera. If it's good,
step back. Did you just bash Damon Wayans? Major Payne, Damon Wayans. Podcast is over. God damn
him and his children.
Want my sympathy?
If the movies are done really well, then like basically this underground society that we live in, this underground community, takes a step towards mainstream. It gets to follow the League of Legends path. It gets to follow the World of Warcraft path. And you know, World of Warcraft is still a very nerdy thing, but the fact that when a World of Warcraft commercial plays on TV, my mom knows what it is, and my, you know, 8-year-old cousin that doesn't exist knows what it is. That's a big deal, and that's not the case with Magic right now. Magic gets to that stage and we start going up back on ESPN and stuff, like everything could change. It could be huge.
I feel like it's going to be a tough disconnect though. Is, you know, if you're making a movie or, you know, telling the story, the lore, how do you convert that to, hey, I want to go buy some packs of Magic cards and learn this game with it, you know, if you haven't played for, like, it's crazily complex to get into at first.
That is absolutely true, but people get dedicated to things. They get crazy about things. Look at Harry Potter. Harry Potter is a random whatever. It's just a story about a kid in a wizard hat. And then it was a book. People flipped out over the books. They started cosplaying just because of the books. They would, you know, on Halloween, you're dressing up as that. You're going to the library. You're creating your own language. Like, people get crazy fanatical because they love this character. They love this story. Then it's converted to a movie, and you have an entirely new class of people who never even read the books that start doing the exact same thing just because the movie, they feel that the movies are done really well.
But I feel like it's the difference between, like, dressing up like a visual character I'm seeing versus I'm going to go read through an instruction manual.
That's the thing is, I don't know if we're going to pick up, you know, let's say a billion people see this movie. Obviously a billion people are not seeing the movie, but let's say a billion people,
every single billion people China, China, damn it.
I don't expect a billion people to start playing Magic. I expect 5% of them maybe to start playing Magic, but I expect 20-30% of them to start forming a Magic community, start having cosplay going on with magic characters and costumes, start, you know, that kind of stuff enhances the community, because it's still people, it's it, people are still seeing magic take place regardless of what it is, and they still are going to ask questions, and they're still going to go, why does this exist? It traces back to a card game. Just like when people ask about the Pokemon card game, they know it traces back to a cartoon. It almost be like the exact opposite for us. So like getting people interested is not just about getting them to play cards. We don't need every person in the world playing magic cards. That's not what it needs. We need people in the magic community. We need people, you know, who are doing alters. All that kind of stuff promotes the community and makes it really healthy and really awesome. Look at like every event you go to these days, you have artists signing things, you have cosplay people taking pictures with you, you have like you have pros gunslinging with you. Like it's an event. People have fun. It's not just about playing cards, and that's kind of what Magic needs to become if it's going to reach the masses, basically.
And kind of to flip that on its head a little bit, like there's this very visceral, you know, hey, I'm a Magic player and I go hang out with other Magic players and we do this Magic thing. But you know, the technology today can put Magic, you know, in your iPad, in your Android tablet, on your Android phone, on your PS3, PS4, probably Xbox, Steam. You know, you don't have to actually go find a local game store and jump into a local gaming community to get into playing and learning about Magic too. You can do it very safely, conveniently, on the go, wherever you are. You know, and I would be shocked if whatever movie comes out doesn't have some sort of promo or some sort of, you know, tie-in to a Duels of the Planeswalkers release.
And we already have games like Hearthstone helping promote the card game genre and make it more kind of acceptable and understood by a larger populace. Like there's already like a lot of leverage here that Magic is getting to use, most of it created by itself obviously, but some created by other people. And this movie is just another huge step in the potential right direction. Like I said, they could do it wrong and it could, you know, kind of nerdify us and kind of push us back into our little underground cave. And you know, if that happens, whatever, we'll recover. It's not like Magic's going to end, but on the other hand, it just could be the biggest thing to ever happen to Magic, honestly. Other than Magic,
I just hope the Magic movie comes out before the My Little Pony movie. That's the only thing I really care about.
Dude, don't hate on the bronies.
At some point, it doesn't have to be on the podcast. Somebody has to explain the kind of the concept of bronies. I admit I don't get it.
You're basically a male fanatic of My Little Pony,
but you're a brony. But why? I don't quite understand. As I know, there is this huge, you know, I guess like what 20-year-old male following of My Little Ponies, and to me, it seems just kind of gross.
It is kind of gross, I think, but it's mostly just trying to be counterculture. Like everything that is popular with someone wants to kind of break the mold of what that is. So it's like, oh, only 10-year-old girls could like this thing. I, as an 18, 19, 20-year-old male, am also going to like this thing, and I'm going to make it cool. And it just became a thing. I don't know.
It's like intentionally ironic, but like I know it's intentionally ironic, and I know you know it's intentionally ironic, and I'm going like to take it to a level above that.
It's like Mark Wahlberg and the other guys where he learns to dance to make fun of the other guy that knows how to dance. So he learned how to dance sarcastically.
Yes, it's like that, Tom.
Yes. And apparently, if you go with Hasbro's description on NASDAQ, they list Magic the Gathering as their 5th best property, because they list it as being Transformers, Monopoly, Play-Doh, My Little Pony, then it's Magic the Gathering, then we have Nerf, and then Littlest Pet Shop. So at least Magic beat Littlest Pet Shop.
I actually believe these numbers were true, at least in the past. I don't know about anymore because of the movies, but I believe Magic is the highest percentage grossing thing. Like it earns more per dollar that is put into it than any other property. It's just not as large as Transformers. Like Transformers makes, let's say, 10% profit. Magic makes like a 90% profit. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I'm just making things up. So it makes a higher percentage of its total back, but that is still less than Transformers, which has a gigantic movie franchise and, you know, is grossing millions and billions of dollars a year. So even though that they only get 10%, it just happens to be more. But I think Magic is like, you know, per pound, the best property they have.
And I'm also excited once the Magic movie comes out. I can't wait for the Asylum to do their knockoff of that Magic movie. So I think that could be a beautiful thing.
Well, if they're doing a knockoff, that means the Magic movie was good. So I'll accept that. Because
exactly.
If it's bad, there's not going to need to be a knockoff made. It will be the self-parody.
So obviously, as you know, as in weeks, months to come, we'll let you know if there's any new news about this, if they ever actually release a title or a date.
I imagine we're not going to learn a lot about it for a very long time. Like, so, this thing's not even begun production yet, and movies take years to film. So,
yes, I love the term pre-production in the movie world. It just means that, like, hey, we're going to make this movie, and somebody wrote it on a napkin somewhere. Like, oh, we're in pre-production like right now.
I guarantee there's no storyline written for it yet. It's literally just somebody said, hey, let's make a movie with a Johnny in it. And they're like, okay, let's start talking. And that's where they're at right now.
Okay, and related to this, as we talk about Magic expanding its brand into things that I don't understand, is why is Wizards of the Coast selling Jace silver coins?
I have no idea. Please, Adam, you can tell us, because this is one of the strangest things.
You think I'm in those meetings? I'm not there. I have no idea.
It's Australian currency, even. They couldn't get the U.S. to agree, so they made it an Australian legal.
New Zealand.
Excuse me.
Sorry. Whoa, back up from the mic, Australians. Get your boomerang. Put them back. I'm sorry, guys.
Whichever one of you are offended.
Don't throw
more
that canto at me. I don't even know if
New Zealanders are more offended that I called them Australians, or if Australians are more offended that I called them New Zealanders.
I don't know which side is.
Yeah, maybe.
The banana benders, yeah, you got to watch out for them.
All right, so they literally, they went to the U.S. government. They were like, hey, could we make a currency? And they're like, no. And so they went to New Zealand.
Bitcoins? Get out of here. That sounds like a Bitcoin.
What happened? Mark Rosewater's discovery had a silver mine in his backyard. He was like, I got to do something with all this silver, guys. Like, what happened?
That's the thing. If you look at the announcement, you know, it shows like, you know, a sample of what it could look like. If you click on the link, it's not actually to like go buy the coins or tells you where to get them. It's actually a pre-order for retailers to say, yes, I would be interested in buying some of these to stock them.
Okay.
And so it seems to me, and I'm just reading and guessing. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know anything more than you do, but it looked to me like it was to basically vet interest in the mint to make a run of these, and then have them looks like be international, they're legal currency, but it seemed to be specifically like a collectible item, just like a hey, this is a really cool silver magic coin. Will collectors buy it from retailers? Let's find out.
What? It's like the infomercials you see at 2 a.m, where you're buying the commemorative coin of Samuel L. Jackson and, you know, Paul Walker. You know,
theoretically, this is still actually worth $2 in New Zealand money.
You wonder what Elizabeth II thinks that on the other side of her face is a fucking wizard throwing spells around with blue glowing eyes, just be like, oh god,
it's changed the mind sculptor even. Like
mind sculpted you, Elizabeth.
They literally put the most expensive card in modern day Magic history, like, it's so weird,
into money. And literally they didn't pick
Jace as an abstract figure. They literally took the card art Jace the Mind Sculptor specifically. It's really weird.
I would rather have 1 ounce of Jace the Mind Sculptors than 1 ounce of silver. That would have to be worth
more. 1 ounce of Jace the Mind Sculptors is definitely worth more than 1 ounce of silver.
They should make that. Definitely. That seems cooler.
And he's just banned in 90% of the format.
Just to make people mad.
Just wait till he gets unbanned in modern. Oh, that's another thing you can talk about in the news. Next week, the modern bannings and unbannings will be announced. I actually have an article going up on Channel Fireball this weekend about it. But yeah, it's a huge deal because the Pro Tour is February 20th and the Pro Tour is modern. And so you have a lot of people, myself included, who are testing for this Pro Tour, except we are pretty positive something is going to change. We just don't know what. So we are all waiting for these bannings and unbannings announcement, and it's going to be a pretty big deal.
And about a month to.
Yeah, well, not even. We're going to have, it's going to be January 27th, I believe, is the announcement date. And then the Pro Tour is the 20th. So,
and talking about modern, I mean, use a program. This I don't think you're targeted with this, but what do you guys think of the announcement of these modern event decks? Where they're expensive, $75 a pop.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical of what's going to be in them, because when you have a standard event deck, you can make a competitive deck out of a bunch of commons, uncommons, and 10 rares. That's fine. But when you're talking about modern, the mana bases alone are hundreds of dollars. You can't put that kind of thing into an event deck. So they're really going to be restricted in what they can do here. You have things like Affinity. They might do that because most of the deck of Affinity is relatively cheap. You could sub out like the Mox Opals, for example, because those are a little too expensive. And maybe like Mono Red Burn, if that's a thing, I guess. They've done that in standards. I don't expect them to keep beating that horse too much. maybe Splinter Twin without a bunch of mana fixing. Like, there aren't too many. You can't build Jund. It's got Lilianas and Tarmogoyfs and Deathrite Shamans and a $500 mana base. Like, you can't put that in a 75-card deck. If you do that, you know, the secondary market just goes haywire. So I think they're going to be really...
I got to kind of leave. They're all Chinese fakes. They're all Chinese fakes.
Oh, that's what's going on.
That makes sense. Does it.
But I think, yeah, I think maybe they'll invent some modern decks. That's the thing, is I don't think they like to do that. I don't think they like to be like, here, we built this deck and you guys didn't know about it and now it exists. I don't think they like to do that ever. So I feel like they're just going to use existing archetypes and just use the ones that are, like, you know, really cheap, which is going to limit them extremely. But, you know, maybe they'll have some cool ones. Maybe there'll be a Tarmogoyf or two reprinted. Who knows?
Yeah, it feels like this is it's a weird group that they're targeting, because it's not like a random person be like, I want to try playing Standard because I never played in a turn before. They're not going to go for a $75 like pre-con deck. That just this feels like there's a little bit of a disconnect that seems really expensive. It would likely be worth that much money.
I honestly think this is just a way to get something reprinted, and I don't know what it is. Like, these event decks, if there's something worthwhile in Modern, that's the thing, is they know exactly what the secondary market looks like in Modern. If there's something worthwhile Modern legal in these decks, it doesn't matter who they're targeting, because tournament players will buy them just to acquire the card. So I think that might be priority number one, just to ensure that they do leave shelves. And then I don't know, like, you're right, I don't know who they're targeting. Like, the standard player who's interested in Modern, like, doesn't he just ask his friends about it? I don't know, it's confusing.
Yeah, it feels like you have to be a little bit more of an advanced, I guess, tournament player to be getting into Modern. So I assume Standard is kind of the first tournament step that you would be taking. Definitely. and then Modern seems to be number two. I mean, it's a great, I guess, eternal format now, but.
Well, that's the thing, is like, you know, to kind of do a comparison, like, do you guys remember when, like, Wizards used to have, like, starter, intermediate, advanced classifications, and they'd have, like, the specific starter decks to learn Magic and stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
And then they did the market research, and they figured out, turns out most players don't go, hey, I want to learn this game that my buddies are playing. I'll go buy the starter deck and then see what that does myself, and then maybe buy some core set intermediate stuff, and then I'll buy what they're playing. No, they just go and buy booster packs of whatever their buddies are playing, of whatever the most recent set is. You know, that's why they changed a lot of how they do the pre-releases, how they put, you know, basic lands and booster packs, a lot of those things like that, because they just wanted to serve what the players were doing. So now they have a PTQ season where if you're just getting started in competitive Magic, and I don't think it's an uncommon story where somebody's like, oh, I want to qualify for the Pro Tour, let me get a standard deck together. Oh, how's that work? You know, you just put a deck together and you start playing. You know, now they have an off-the-shelf option for somebody who is just getting into Magic and wants to play in this Modern PTQ. They can literally buy something at the store and enter the event.
That's true. I have seen players who, like, play a sealed deck in a Vintage tournament because they didn't have anything else. I've seen that happen a lot. So I could definitely see that group who just has some money to blow, but they definitely have no expertise in the format, just being like, oh, like $75, and then I get to have a reasonable deck, especially if there's anything worthwhile in there, because then you have everyone else to them. Oh, yeah, it's worthwhile. Definitely get it. You're going to get a $50 card out of there, and that makes them happier and more okay with their purchase, et cetera. But I think I could see what Adam's saying for sure, because I have definitely been there when it's, you know, just the guy who plays only limited shows up to the Modern event, and he's like, well, I have this random deck.
And I have $74.99 on May 30th. Let's do this.
Well, it's not usually that they're going and planning on buying the deck, but when somebody tells them that they can get a Modern legal deck and have a chance at winning this tournament or a $500 prize down the line, $75 seems reasonable to them. Or their parents gave them $75 to spend, or it's their birthday, or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People spend money.
All that phone sex money has to go somewhere. That's capitalism.
We can't all be making four figures, Tom.
So, okay, guys, I think another big one is, obviously, we are starting to get the preview spoilers for the next expansion. So Born of the Gods. And we will not be going through every card that's been so far released. I think we're up to like 41 cards at this point. But I just want to kind of, for you and Adam, kindly both of you guys, to, if there's any that you're excited about or ones that
you really hate. I'm actively disappointed with the cards so far. Like, it's not that they're necessarily all bad. There's some cool things in there. But usually when the first 20 cards revealed are so crazy, insane, cool that they get you hooked. And then when they release kind of the mediocre uncommon stuff, you're like, oh, okay, but there's still these cool rares. The stuff they led with this time is like, I don't know, just doesn't excite me nearly as much. There's definitely some cool cards. I like Searing Blood. red, 2 damage to a creature instant. And then if that creature dies this turn, deal 3 damage to that player, to the player who owns the creature. So it's like a Searing Blaze variant that always is on, but only does 2 damage to the creature sort of thing. So that card's pretty interesting. There's some stuff like that that's like tournament viable and gets me excited from a this is strong perspective. But in terms of like cool build around type stuff, I'm kind of not feeling it thus far. I don't know. Maybe something will turn it around.
I mean, are you at all interested by the, I guess, sort of the 2-color, I don't know what you want to call them, the legendary enchantment god cards that you need to have the devotion?
I believe people refer to them as the minor gods.
Minor gods? That sounds dumb, but whatever.
Well, they're like, I don't know. Not really. I mean, Xenagos is cool. He has a powerful effect, but they're kind of boring. Like they did an ability that we've done before, so I don't get wowed by the devotion mechanic because I know it exists. So it's cool that it's 2 colors, whatever. Then they're indestructible. We've seen that before, so I kind of gloss over that on the card. And then I get to the new exciting thing that's different from the other gods, and it's 1 ability, and it's like kind of a lackluster, half-assed ability. And it's like, okay, I guess that's what they are. I mean, like, they're fine. I'll play with them. They're going to be cool. But I'm just not – there's no – you know, the most exciting card by far so far has been the Planeswalker. And they previewed that, like, you know, weeks before.
That was pretty much the first thing, yeah. I mean, would I be able to excite you kindly if I told you this set was going to have an artifact only costs 1 that can generate any type of mana of any color?
We already know that card exists.
I was trying to get you excited about Springleaf Drum.
I like their new artwork. The new artwork's really good on it.
I don't remember what the old artwork looks like.
The old artwork is really bad. It's like a Merfolk. I'll pull it up for you. Don't worry. You keep talking. I got it.
Okay, I'm looking at the new Springleaf Drum. It looks cool. He's at least beating on a leaf. That at least has the word. The leaf is in the name of the card, and it's in the art. That's synergy to me. Yeah. How about for you, Adam? Do you have any cards because I know you come from potentially more of a commander standpoint. So you actually already written about one of these cards.
Yeah, I'm definitely not done writing about it. I really, really, really love the preview that they gave Gathering Magic, which is Mogus, God of Slaughter. I mean, you can't spell slaughter without laughter.
God of death metal.
Yeah, it was amazing when that image showed up on Reddit. I'm like, yes, all right.
He does look sweet. His art is awesome.
Yeah. The thing is I really struggled with is I like the idea of, I like playing my Karvek deck, but Karvek never really did what I really wanted him to do, which was kind of like sit out there and kind of annoy and create pressure from like my board sweeps and, you know, damaging effects and stuff like that. And so Mogus is just like, it's not a strict upgrade. I mean, they're different cards, but I feel much happier about having Mogus as my commander because I can drop him on turn 4, wipe the board, and just like keep like nipping away at life totals every turn. I get a little bit of something for it. Or if like they can't just cast their like one awesome commander and pass because he's just going to sit there and get sacked next turn, or they got to take 2 damage anyway. Like I like that it's not oppressive, but it's an interesting choice that works with what I want to do with the deck.
Do you feel at all kind of sort of dirty playing one of these as your commander? Just because technically I could cast my commander and it's not a creature. Does that feel weird to you at all?
It does a little bit. I kind of got over it. I mean, for comparison, the other thing that I really like in the set, and it's definitely not flashy, it's very subtle, but Unravel the Aether, which is like...
Damn, you took the card out there. Okay,
sorry, tuck the artifact in the deck. I like that these indestructible godlike, you know, get this automatic ability cards that can now be cast in a format that's pretty popular. It's now getting these really cool ways to really permanently, you know, or more effectively get rid of really annoying artifacts and enchantments and stuff like that. So like, I'm excited for Unravel the Aether. Like I won't be surprised if there's more coming in the next set. Like I like those type of effects because I think that, you know, if you want to punish me for having an indestructible godlike enchantment, making me throw it into my library and not have it right away feels like the best way to punish me for it.
And like, that's kind of where I see where you're coming from. Unravel the Aether is definitely cool, and I'm happy to have it in standard. But again, it's a reprint of a different card. Like, it's the Glamour, which exists in Morningtide. So it's like really hard to get excited about a card that literally was printed word for word and mana cost for mana cost in the past. It's like, yes, it's a really nice tool to have in standard, and I'm going to play with it. But I'm just not like, jaw on the floor the way I was for Theros when they revealed the gods and they revealed, you know, the Nykthos and things like that. It was just like, holy crap, these things are insane. And I don't know. I'm just kind of missing that right now. You know, their previews up tonight. I guess they just showed off the 3/3 demon for there's 3 mana, colorless black, 3/3 flyer. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 1 life. And then it has bestow of 3 colorless black. The enchanted creature gets +3/+3 in flying. So that guy's kind of cool. Nice aggressive black card. I might consider playing some type of aggressive black strategy. And like the new Infest, -2/-2 and Scry 1. Like that's a cool card again. But it's just nothing. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess for me, coming from the counters that I'm not looking at cards from a pure, I guess, power level, but just from a sort of a flavor of Magic. And I think making for fun casual games is the tribute mechanic. Because I like sort of the browbeat like cards where you sort of it's kind of fun to make your opponent make a bad choice. It's like, hey, you know, one of these is going to hurt. Pick it, and I get to laugh at you, whichever one you picked. I'm guessing, and for you, kindly, from a I guess more of a pro level standpoint, is that a big minus to these cards where you don't control what happens with?
Oh, no, that's a plus. So the way when you get up to really high levels of Magic, people. Generally have very good skill levels and they're able to do things really well. So it's really tough to outplay your opponent in a traditional sense. Generally what you want to do is play the best you can for as long as possible and allow your opponent to make mistakes. So cards that actively present a situation in which your opponent can make a mistake. So basically when I play a card, like I'm playing Nessian Wilds Ravager, right? 4 colors, green, 6/6, tribute 6. When it enters the battlefield, if the tribute wasn't paid, you may have it fight another creature. So I either get a 12/12 or a 6/6 that fights, right? So I'm going to say the large majority of the time, one of two things is going to happen. I'm either going to get a 6/6 that's going to fight and they're going to kill it in response to the fight and nothing is going to happen. Or I'm going to get a 12/12 and they're going to kill it and nothing's going to happen. So in there, I break even. So I know that it doesn't matter which side I choose. It's going to 1/1 removal. Now, I know if they don't have 1/1 removal, a 12/12 gets chump blocked a bunch and a 6/6 that fights already got me a card up and is doing great things for me. So I know deep down inside that a 6/6 that fights is generally better than a 12/12. So in my mind, when I play this card, I'm anticipating getting a 12/12. I'm expecting to get the worst of the two outcomes generally, because that's what in my mind as a deck builder, I go, okay, I'm putting a 6 mana 12/12 into my deck. However, every time I play it, I give my opponent an opportunity to mess up and give me the better half. All of a sudden turning my 6 mana 12/12 that I was already okay with playing into a better card that I now have an advantage with. So that's the way you kind of have to look at these cards. They're kind of like any of the Punisher mechanics, like the book burning and stuff like that. You kind of have to anticipate what your opponent's going to play, what your opponent's going to pick in a vacuum, of course. Every game situation is slightly different. But in a vacuum, which one's going to be weaker? And you have to go, okay, am I okay with playing this card if it was this card every single time? And if you're not, you probably don't want to include that card in your deck.
Yeah, and to kind of flip that on its head, like I have a Pauper Cube, so like I'm really looking forward to seeing more of the commons, especially because tribute's always on a creature. So, you know, it kind of opens itself to like I get an enter the battlefield ability or I get an efficient creature. And so far, like the one they previewed in the mechanics article is like Varagax Giant. And, you know, it's 4 mana, red for 3/3, tribute 2, or your opponent takes 5 to the face.
Yeah, like.
And I don't think anybody is ever going to really choose the 5 damage to the face. And for my cube, a 5/5 for 5 in red, just it isn't that exciting. But you know, there could be other effects like finding a land or drawing a card or things like that, where you know your opponent could misunderstand what you really want to get out of the card, and you know it's something that could make it into my cube.
Yeah, and it just seems fun if you're playing like big multiplayer games too. It's another way of doing politics and whatnot, because it just says for tribute, it says as this creature enters the battlefield, an opponent of your choice may place 2++
to counters on it.
So it could just be fun sort of politics, be like, oh, I did you the favor, or hey, if you put him on here, I'll attack him. It just seems like it'd be sort of another fun way to another level of discourse to that game.
By the way, my designer hat makes me, I don't necessarily like these from a design standpoint in that what they do to tournaments. So Magic is an extremely complicated game, and you're sitting there kind of playing, doing your own thing, thinking about what you're going to do next turn, stare at your hand, whatever. And you have all these thoughts going on, you're planning, you're making all these decisions in your head, and then all of a sudden your opponent plays something, and it's as if you had to forcefully opt in to play a counterspell deck all of a sudden, because it's like, there's a tribute on the stack, what do you want to do? And you're like, so my choice is, you have a 6/6 creature, or you have a 2/2 that when you draw a plains kills my creature, and like, now you have to like factor in all these like new scenarios and what's going on. So it kind of seems like it might slow down tournaments a little bit, at least limited tournaments where you're not, you have no idea these things are coming. So I'll be interested to see what happens when it comes to these things in limited for that reason. But I do think it's a fun mechanic regardless.
The thing that makes me like it is it gives some level of interactivity where it's, I think sometimes, and this is why I get for me too, where sometimes at the high level play, I get less interested because there's no interaction. Like you said, you're kind of playing your game. You're doing the best game of Magic that you can.
Sure.
I'm playing the game for the interaction. So to me, it seems kind of exciting, like, hey, it doesn't matter what you came prepared to play at this table, I can force you to interact with me. You're going to make a decision right now. But I agree. From a tournament standpoint, especially if, like a new set of limited, that could take a long time.
What is that thing doing? I don't know what you think about this, Conley. The one thing that I really like about Tribute is actually, I think it reduces some of the complexity. Because unlike Monstrosity, which is now an instant speed effect that just sits there and it's an onboard thing that you have to remember constantly and still have to play around and make tons of decisions as the game continues. You know, all these tribute guys are, you know, I guess what they call virtual vanillas. Like, they do their thing. Like, you got to make the decision, you got to think about it. But then once it's done, it's just a dude and it just sits there.
Yeah, they're definitely more like instance of sorcerers in that respect. So that is pretty good. They don't have like levelers, for example, are the exact, they're the worst violators of this rule, which is that they have really complicated text. You have to know every single level what they do, and you have to constantly be turning the card over and reading it and stuff, assuming you don't know what it does well. So like, they're the epitome of bad design in terms of flow of gameplay, both mechanically and because the cards are so complex. Whereas I think Tribute passes the, like, you know, it's a one shot effect generally. One decision making, so that's really good. It's just that decision kind of catches your opponent off guard. Like, if I'm playing a mono red deck and I'm tapped out or whatever, and my opponent plays, a million compulsive researchers in a row, I just get to focus on what I'm doing. But the second they play a factor fiction, which is basically what all these cards are, I now have to like go into the think mode and kind of break my concentration or whatever and think about what they're doing. And I think that's good on one level. I think it's important for players to, you know, stay interactive, like Tom's saying. But I also think that, you know, the amount to which you do that could be overbearing. And the fact that these are happening on commons and stuff like that, it could be a little frustrating at times when, like, you play a tribute creature and you stare at your opponent for, you know, 2 minutes while they go into the tank. But at the same time, once people start knowing the card file and stuff, I think it'll be relatively smooth. Generally, I play with people who kind of know the cards and stuff. And I guess if you're playing with people who don't know the cards, you're probably a little more patient to that sort of thing anyway. But it was just, that was the only gripe I had with the mechanic is that it could potentially do that. But I do think it is a cool mechanic overall.
And as the weeks come up to the set release, we'll definitely be talking more as we get more cards previewed. Because it seems like we haven't had as many. And for me, I always like to look for ones to me that sound like a medical illness. And so far, the winner of the set is Tromocratus. Because it sounds like some sort of horrible eye affliction.
That's true. You know what it means in Greek?
I don't.
It's like terrifying one or something like that, but it's kind of a problem because that's what it's supposed to mean from ancient Greek or whatever. But apparently in modern Greek, it translates over into terrorist, which apparently has caused a little bit of...
Really?
Yeah. People are a little upset about it.
Yeah, I just kind of typed it up here. Tromocratus means terrorist in Greek, so this guy will be
Osama. Yeah, in modern day Greek, it apparently
kind of Kraken. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it apparently kind of took that. It took that course, you know, in the last 20 or 30 years when the term terrorism has become popularized. But from ancient Greece, apparently, it just meant like bringer of terror, which was like a big scary monster, which is what obviously they're trying to mimic here. But
yeah, ruler through quaking fear or quaking with fear is kind of what Trump. Sure. Okay, interesting. There you go. There's a hard thing about having a game that is in so many languages where at some point you're going to be putting a skeleton on a tube of toothpaste and making a bunch of Chinese people mad. We can go all into the weirdness of advertising in different cultures, but it's good fun. Well, guys, the last thing I wanted to do before I do my little finding Richard Garfield on Wikipedia and some of the awesome things are there that I have no idea if they're actually true or not. It's going to be my close of the show. But I wanted to give Conley, you, and then Adam to talk about sort of what is maybe coming up soon for you, what's coming up next, what people can be, you know, keep an eye out for from you guys. I'll point at Conley first.
Sure. I leave for Grand Prix Sacramento tomorrow, which is a limited Grand Prix. Just Theros, no Born of the Gods yet. The week after that, I will be in Vancouver. Well, actually, I fly into Seattle and will be driving up to Vancouver. I don't actually know with who or in what way, but I will be doing that for a standard Grand Prix. Then after that, I have a couple weeks of no tournaments before I head to Ireland for Pro Tour Born of the Gods in Dublin, which is February 20th. And yeah, that's my schedule for the next month or so.
And like you said, at some point you'll be able to share, for the Dire Wolf company that you work for.
That's not on a, I have no idea when. It could literally be next week. It could be 3 months from now when I could talk about it. I have no idea. We'll go public with it and stuff, and there'll be announcements and things.
Okay. I was just kind of curious. Is this going to be like a board game or a car? I wasn't sure if you could even share like that level of what you guys.
Well, I can tell you that the name of the company is Dire Wolf Digital once again.
I thought that just meant I used my fingers to play with it, you know, digital, like a digital rectal exam.
Oh yeah, that's what it means.
Okay. So that you're working a game called digital colon the rectal exam.
Hey, you're trying to get me fired here, Tom. What are you trying to do?
Well, I'm just curious what kind of games it is.
I can't tell you. I can't tell you anything about
it. You can't say like, hey, this is a game that has a board and I'm moving stuff around like Candyland on it, or
I could say that the name of our company is Dire Wolf Digital, and that's about it.
Do you guys have a website that would, or Dire do you have like Digital. A supervisor that I could talk to that might be able to give me better information?
You can call up Scott Martin, the owner of the company. He will probably be drinking at his house right now, and you can complain to him about why I can't tell you what we're working on.
That does not fill me with great hope to know that your CEO is at home drinking. Oh God, it's going so horribly bad.
Hey, it's 8:45 at night. The man's allowed to drink. Give him a break.
Okay, I didn't know if he had kids. Because if you have kids, you had to do your hard drinking. You got to be down by like.
Oh yeah, he has kids, but I don't believe. Like he has a wife too, so I don't know. Whatever.
Okay,
I'll leave his personal life. I'll leave his personal life out of our random podcast moment.
Pretty sure that next comment was going to be, why doesn't the wife take care of the kids? Crickets. No, Adam, save Conley. Save him, because he just is always getting himself
in. Save me? You were hounding me about what my game is, trying to get me to leak information and become public enemy number one at my company.
Okay, well... Adam, I'm going to listen to you, and I'm going to do some Google searching. I'm going to defeat Conley.
Damn it.
Things are pretty quiet. I mean, you know, got another preview coming in Command Tower this next Thursday, so I got to, Karametra finally got revealed, the green-white god, so I no longer worship Erebos, change religions, but... it's pretty quiet. I mean, I don't have any event plans or travel plans really until March. So a lot of it is just kind of buckling down, catching up on things. We got a bunch of new writers and people kind of joining, gathering magic and doing some stuff. And I tapped some pretty cool, pretty smart guys in the community to do a few things. So, that's kind of what's exciting for me right now.
Okay. And like you said, Adam Conley, can you guys both say which articles you write on the Daily MTG website so people can keep an eye out for you?
I currently don't write any articles on Daily MTG. I used to write the daily decks, but they have us on 6 month rotations for that. But I write for tcgplayer.com and channelfireball.com and produce video content there as well. As well as Twitter, Conley81 is where you can find me on there.
All right. Adam, how about for you?
I'm the writer for Command Tower on Daily MTG. That's the Thursday Commander column. I kind of like the format a lot. You'll catch me doing some text coverage coming up. I'm locked in for Montreal and Richmond back-to-back in March. So I'll be on the text teams for those and hopefully a few other events as the year goes on. I also do some stuff on GatheringMagic.com, do some news posts, but I'm working on a Mogus deck. So if you want to rock some slaughter, check back and help me out in a couple weeks as I keep building my brand new updated deck.
Cool. And Conley, I'm going to read two paragraphs from the direwolfdigital.com website for you right here. Direwolf will be emphasizing, quote, anytime, any place play with its technology, ultimately allowing customers to play from multiple types of clients, all connected to single backend. Most damning is the next paragraph, which is the company is currently producing a trading card game based on an upcoming massively multiplayer online game. What? So why couldn't you share that with me?
That is not...
This is on your website.
I don't think you're reading... I don't think that's true.
I'm at direwolfdigital.com, and this that's is under the...
You're just making stuff... I'm going to go to this website.
This is the July 13th, 2010 posted in News, Press. Industry veterans joined forces...
Oh, 2010 post. That is forever ago.
Yeah, well,
2014. I've been working for the company for 2 years.
There's only information we have to go with.
For the company for 2 years. That post is 4 years old. I have no idea what they're talking about, clearly.
Well, this is all we have to go off. So until you tell me differently, you guys are making a trading card game based on an upcoming mess.
They
pulled
us all in 2 years ago to work on a project that existed 4 years ago. What are you talking about?
This is 3.5 years ago. This is July 13th of 2010.
Tom, I'm
sorry.
I need to slap these shenanigans down. The most recent news post is from May 8th, 2013, and it reads, "Here's our semi-annual We're Still Here post. We're still growing and hiring. We've got some really cool projects that we're working on that are still under wraps. Check our jobs page for recent postings,
and we're looking for passionate, dedicated
individuals to help level up our studio." They literally made a news post month ago to say that they're not making news posts about anything.
Semi-annual, we're still here. Now it's too nebulous. See, Tom, comments, I can't even comment on it.
You're just trying to spread nonsense around here. You're gonna get me fired. This is ridiculous. Scott, just drink up. I promise it'll all be okay. I'll take care of Tom.
I'm just gonna become your guys' QA analyst. I'll get all the info.
We have dozens of QA people.
It says your guys are hiring a QA analyst right now.
Well, you're probably looking at a 2006 post.
This is December. Well, let me go to your jobs page.
We have some jobs. We're definitely hiring, but we are also like a 70-person company or whatever. We have a bunch of people.
Engineering, could maybe illustration. That's not really my forte. System administrator. Oh, card designer. I could probably do that. Just kidding. All right, Kylie, I'm done. But let's bring this up. I'm going to tell you some facts about Richard Garfield, because some of these are just absolutely phenomenal on here. Have you guys ever looked at his Wikipedia page?
No.
Let me see. They have some interesting stuff about his family history. Richard Garfield is a great-great-grandson of U.S. President James A. Garfield, and his great-uncle invented the paperclip.
I don't believe that, to be true.
It is cited, if you go down to number 7, apparently it was in Dragon Magazine, published December of 1998.
His great-uncle? You're trying to say the paperclip was invented in like 1900 or whatever?
I'm pulling up the Wikipedia page for the paperclip right now. Let's see who they credit. History. According to the Early Office Museum, the first bent wire paperclip was awarded to Samuel B. Fay in 1867.
That's too old to be great uncle. He'd have to be like great, great, great.
Yeah. This is definite proof that the modern paperclip was well known to 1810. They had a patent with him. Yes, I'm about to say that does not seem to be true. So you can't trust everything that, oh my God, the guy that invented it is hideously ugly. Yeah. So it just shows you can't trust everything on Wikipedia. When I read that, I had to guess it wasn't true, and it just struck me as kind of entertaining. He also designed his first game at the age of 13. I mean, do you guys have another Richard Garfield game that you have played and really enjoyed? Like, I was a big fan of Netrunner. Do you guys have like a personal other favorite?
The only other Richard Garfield game I've played is Soulforge, which he does not have sole credit for. He's worked with Brian Kibler's team over at Stoneforge Games, and I'm not a huge fan of Soulforge. It's just not my type of game.
I'm with you. I actually didn't really. I played it for like 2 days, and that kind of felt like I got my fill a little bit.
Yeah, like I just can't get the level of investment that I really enjoy out of games out of it. It's not to say it's a bad game, it's just not necessarily for me, but that's literally the only other Richard Garfield game I've ever played.
How about for you, Adam? Is there any other ones that you've kind of toyed with?
Yeah, I used to get into Jihad, which went on to become Vampire, the Eternal Struggle. And was spin off, and so I think the rights to the card game were sold to some other company, Mind's Eye, I don't know. But originally it was this card game called Jihad. It was a Deckmaster game, and it was all set in like the Vampire the Masquerade universe. I used to really play Vampire the Masquerade a lot, so I kind of enjoyed the card game that went with it.
I remember when I'd seen that game, because I was, you know, younger and just started playing Magic, to me it looked just overwhelmingly complex. I don't know if it actually was, but when I looked at the cards, that's what I got out of it.
Yes, it was. You needed to know a lot of rules text based on icons. So, like, different abilities and factions and interactions were all based off of just the rules book. And it was very much like early Magic, where you had to read this tome and you didn't necessarily even understand what you were really supposed to do. Huh. I'm pretty sure I never actually played a game correctly of that in my life.
That's the way I played Magic probably for about 2 years after learning from the little, like, that little instruction book that came in the beta decks. You need a microscope and like tweezers to actually try to open and read through that little instruction manual. All right, guys, we're at the end of the show. It's almost 10 o'clock my time, so I'm turning into a pumpkin. So thank you for listening. This is MTG Potpourri. Hopefully we're going to aim for maybe like once a week, once every other week. This is going to be a little bit more of a casual approach, going through some news. I'm going to try to get Conley fired probably most weeks, not every single episode that I'll try to.
Oh, don't worry. I've already sent an email to my boss to inform them that people are watching him.
Watching his drinking through the window?
I didn't say anything.
Hey, you just said drinking. You didn't say it was alcohol. Could have been.
Yeah, exactly.
Yoo-hoo. Drink juice. Could have been drinking Yoo-hoo.
Drinking Yoo-hoo might be worse than drinking alcohol.
No, because Yoo-hoo, you can be the cool older brother that flips the cap into the goldfish bowl. The classic TV ad. Did I just date myself? I even used the voice inflection for the question mark even. All right, guys. Do you guys not know what I'm talking about?
People at home right now, they're like, Tom's lost it. Literally lost it.
No, older people will remember the Yoo-hoo TV ad. But as we sign off, do you guys have an email address or any sort of contact you wanted to share, potentially for new job opportunities, Conley?
Honestly, for me, the easiest way is going to be going to direwolfdigital.com. No, I'm just kidding. Honestly, Twitter is going to be the easiest at Conley81. You can hit me up on Facebook, but some of the posts go to the random folder that I don't ever check out, the like other folder. I don't know if anyone knows that Facebook has this, but you probably secretly have hundreds of posts you don't even know about in your other folder.
I probably do, because I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so that happens. And also, I just don't have time to respond to every super long post. But chances are, if you could fit it within 140 characters, I will probably respond to it. So that's probably the best place to hit me up. Or you can also respond to any of the forums in any of my articles. I'll probably read your comment there.
Well, how about probably for you, Adam?
Just hit me up on Twitter, the_Stybs, STYBS.
All right. I guess we'll roll with the Twitter. That does roll. I sounded old when I said that.
Look, Tom, we're moving to a modern day.
Yes, I know.
When we used to get all the emails from fans anyway, it was always so tough because you would get like just 10 emails and it felt like an eternity of emails to read through.
Yes, I still kind of like the emails. I would still love if somebody.
I like emails when the content is worthwhile, like when it's like, here's a picture of my daughter wearing your face as a costume on Halloween or whatever. Like, that's cool. Well, it's creepy, but cool. But the Twitter is like, you just get so much. It's like so much faster instant gratification. Half the time people are telling you things that you don't need to respond to. And when somebody sends you an email, you always kind of feel obligated to respond. But when Twitter, they're like, hey, awesome job on that draft recently. You're like, yeah, he's just giving me a heads up, and you move on with your life. I don't know. Just so much easier.
I'll give you my Twitter as well. Mine is a PSG reader. So PSG, R-E-A-D-E-R. If anybody doesn't know what a PSG is, it's a polysomnogram. There you go.
Actually stands for passage reader. And that's because Tom is a highly religious man who stands in front of his mass every Sunday and reads passages from the Bible.
Yeah, I'm a Tromocritus of my church. I rule through quaking fear. All right. So that is all of our stuff. Again, thank you guys. Again, MTG Potpourri is the podcast. If you don't understand what Potpourri is, a reference to Jeopardy, where Potpourri is a category where it can contain almost anything. Hence, because this
potpourri is a real life thing that can contain almost anything that smells good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Are you afraid to leave your house in Colorado? Are you afraid just like a high motor is just going to mow you down on the street?
No. I don't know if you know the effects of marijuana, but it's probably the chances of getting hit by a vehicle have not gone up since that law has taken place. I would say drunk drivers and stuff are still significantly scarier.
I'm so curious.
The people who are stoned and driving are like going 10 under the limit.
I can't wait till that first person gets arrested by a federal like officer in, you know, and this is probably coming to a lot of states, in the states where it's technically legal, you know, on a state level, but not on a federal level. That's going to be so interesting.
Well, the Obama and the federal administration has already said they will not interfere on a federal level with anything that happens within the state, although they will crack down extremely hard anybody that is trying to transport things outside of the state.
So if I go to that place down in the South where I can like stand in five states at once and smoke a joint there, I could get just a whole lot of felonies.
I think you might get away with that. I think that one might be – there's not like a cop standing there waiting to arrest you if you stand on the 5 points thing.
Getting high on the five corners or whatever they call it.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called.
Or I could just drop a joint. You could just roll it over into another state and you're officially trafficking and crossing state lines.
I don't know why you feel the need to jump through this loophole that you're creating right now.
But just
trust me, your life will be much better if you don't attempt to smuggle marijuana across the law in any type of ironic fashion.
Okay. That's good life advice. Thank you, Conley. All right, Adam Conley, thank you very much for joining me. Have a good one, everybody. Don't smuggle marijuana. That is the best Magic Pro Tour advice I've gotten yet from Conley.
And stay in school.
Don't smuggle drugs. Okay, I'm turning off the recording here.